Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18
plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Solskjaer has won the European Cup for Manchester United. It's absolutely astonishing.
The double is definitely Manchester United's.
Too far for Ronaldo to think about it. Oh!
Absolutely sensational!
It's red in Russia. This English night in Europe is Manchester United's night.
We've had the international break now. Manchester United have some more injury concerns ahead of a crucial clash against Liverpool that some have claimed could spell the end for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as manager. United themselves insist that's not true, and after a couple of weeks without United playing, we've had a chance to reflect on things. We preview the Liverpool game and talk more generally about all things United. And as always, we have our extensive youth, loan and women's roundup on Series 5, Episode 11 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. No game to react to this week, Jack, and that, I guess, gives us the opportunity to reflect on the season so far. We're fewer than 4 days away from a big game against Liverpool. It could, I guess, in one way, it could hardly come at a worse time, given United's form, but it also presents a chance, a big chance, for Solskjaer's team to kickstart their campaign, their season. That seems unlikely, though. We'll talk about Liverpool more in a second, but since we've had no game over the last week, how have, if at all, Your thoughts on the situation at United changed?
I wouldn't say my thoughts have changed too drastically from the last time we spoke on it on the podcast. I think it's still not an acceptable situation, really, and not something that is easy for us as fans to get behind. I think maybe, you know, come to think of it a little bit more in the long term, when it's a little bit removed from any games, and, you know, maybe think that ultimately whether we finish fifth or ninth this season actually in the long run might not matter too much, and that it might be worth accepting a truly terrible season, like I'm talking like mid-table finishing, if that is what it takes for something to change and for us to kind of move forward eventually. But I wouldn't say too much has really changed on the thoughts of this season specifically.
Yeah, I'd agree. I guess time kind of numbs the anger to a certain extent, but I think to me it's been a really busy period for United in terms of how many games they've had. We've had loss after loss, draw after draw, and we've constantly had this kind of anger behind us and not had the chance to really reflect on it. And I think when you're not watching United play every 3 days, it becomes even more obvious where the club's actual problems lie, and it's not with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I think now I've had this break, and who knows, we're football fans, we're incredibly fickle, it might change, but I think at the moment I'm now definitely of the opinion that United have to back Solskjaer, and they can reevaluate at the end of the season and see if there's progress being made either on the pitch or off it, because it has to be, by the end of the season, there has to be significant progress in one of those factors.
Yeah.
Both would be preferable, but one of those, and you would think it would be off the pitch where progress is made, has to be shown. So United can reevaluate at the end of the season, but I think now I'm pretty confident that I want them to back Solskjaer for at least the next 8-9 months.
Well, I think something we said on the last podcast is very true, that Solskjaer might not be the solution here, but he's also not necessarily the problem, if that makes sense. I think he's probably not the best manager that we could have at the football club at the moment. And I think most people would probably accept that argument at the moment. But I also don't think getting a new manager solves all of our problems. And in some ways, it might take a season where we finish 9th or 10th to actually create a sort of almost like reset button on the entire football club. Because what is it now? 5-6 seasons of poor results, or at least results that are poor in the eyes of fans, haven't been enough to kind of create that reset of the club. And so maybe it will take a terrible season for that to happen. And so that's kind of what I mean when I say that whether we finish 5th or sort of 9th or 10th this season might not make that much difference, because we're still not getting Champions League football. We're still not getting the results that we want. But actually, finishing lower down, I struggle with this, because you would have thought after 5 years of mediocrity, that would have been enough to reset everything that was going on, and it hasn't. But I mean, who knows, maybe finishing mid-table and genuinely being a mid-table team this year might be the catalyst for massive wholesale changes.
Yeah, I think there's so much of it. There's so much to do with United where you kind of just question how people haven't realised what the problem is yet. And perhaps they have realised what the problem is, but they don't want to see it that way. So obviously you question that, but at the same time, it seems... The problem I have with it, which is the same as you, I think, is... Every step of decreasing quality for United has seemed like it will be the step that triggers the reboot, that triggers the change in how the club is run. And it just hasn't happened. You would think falling so heavily under David Moyes would be a wake-up call. You would think having to sack Louis van Gaal after he's won the FA Cup would be a wake-up call. And you'd think Jose Mourinho in particular would be a wake-up call. My hope is that they've already realised... with Solskjaer's poor form, is that they've already realised. They accept that they now need to make serious changes. The problem I have is, during this international break, the papers have been full of articles going in-depth on how United is run, how they think that they finally managed to get player recruitment right. Now, we've had one good summer. Perhaps they have got it right, finally. But this constant briefing of the press... after so many years of mediocrity, as you say, is so frustrating. Particularly in... United just seem... They never accept silence. They always... It seems to me United always feel like they have to fill the papers with something, and they're going to try and make it positive.
And there was the expected leaks about a new technical director coming in this time, Edwin van der Sar.
And yeah. It's just... It's the same things... That's the thing with United, is that the same issues always come... on and off the pitch, and that's not a surprise. So we've said it before that the lack of direction at the top of the club in relation to transfers and recruitment and strategy feeds onto the pitch, because there's no direction on the pitch either. And the same problem with this kind of just relaying of the old same stuff over and over again is exactly the same thing. It happens on and off the pitch. We see the same patterns happen under various managers. We're going to appoint a technical director every time the newspaper's a bit quiet or there's some criticism for United. And on the pitch, it's, well, United have a decent run of games. It looks like they're a really good counter-attacking side. And then you realise that actually they can't create goals at all.
It makes sense. If you don't have any direction, you don't have a clear plan in your recruitment strategy and the kind of players you're going to bring in, then you're not going to have a clear plan on the pitch. It's what we've been saying for years, that part of the reason why City and Liverpool have been so successful over the last few years is that they have a plan they can work towards. And when they sign players, they make a point of signing players that fit into what they're trying to do. You know, even though we all complain about you know, City's oil money and all this stuff, quite often they don't actually sign the most expensive players. They don't often sign players that are established world-class footballers yet by the time they get to City. They become world-class players there because they are bought, because they fit into their style, they fit into what, at the moment, Pep and before that, all of Manuel Pellegrini and all the previous managers, they fit into what they were trying to do. And that all that then feeds down onto the football pitch, because if your recruitment strategy, if your board is all pulling in one direction, your team will also be pulling in one direction. And then the football you play, lo and behold, becomes much more cohesive. We haven't had that probably since David Gill left the club.
Yeah, I think it's just the things with these reports. There was one in the Times, one in the Telegraph, one in the Athletic. Different. They all differed, to be fair. They weren't all just the trotted out same brief, but they seem very positive about how United have changed on certain matters and the plans for the future. And it's positive until you remember how many times we've seen such empty words over the last half a decade. It's never followed up with the right action. So what United have been saying in this October international break is very positive. Or not saying, but leaking to journalists about how they turned down Neymar because they weren't sure about his personality and the fact that he just wanted money. How they researched 15 right-backs before signing Aaron Wan-Bissaka. So there are obviously positive things there, but that's what United want you to hear.
But also, I mean, doing a lot of research on a signing you're about to spend £50 million on shouldn't be something that we have to show off about. That should just be part and parcel of signing a player. I mean, that's like someone bragging that they went to three different car dealerships before they spent 50 grand on a car. Like, that's something you'd expect. I'd be worried if they didn't have to do that. So the fact that that's almost something they feel like they have to brief the press about to get some kind of credit from fans is ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess that's the other thing about United now, is that as fans on and off the pitch, again, the same patterns on and off it, is we've got such low expectations. So something like this is, brilliant, United are finally researching their signings. And that should absolutely be happening all the time. But the thing is, there was all this positive news. There was also a report that Mourinho signed Fred for £52 million because he didn't actually want him, but he thought United just wouldn't give him another midfielder if he didn't sign Fred. So he just went for him anyway, which is absolutely typical Mourinho and also typical United. There's a lot of talk about the January transfer window because we're in October, obviously. So papers and fans have decided that all talk must now focus on the January transfer window, which is so many games away. It really shouldn't be the focus now, but the Athletic have claimed that United are targeting 4 signings in January. I mean, seems baffling to me.
I'd be very shocked if we sign anyone in January who would come in as a first team player. I mean, historically, United don't really use the January transfer window that much, both under Ferguson and since then. I mean, really, the only significant signings we've made in January recently were Juan Mata and Alexis Sanchez. I mean, the Alexis signing obviously did not go as expected. Yes. And the Juan Mata signing really was, even though he's turned out to be a pretty good player and was someone that we needed, was a bit of a panic signing, really, in the middle of David Moyes' season.
It was also that Mata, he's had some good moments, but should have been a far better player than he has been, like pretty much everyone United have signed. I just think that there's only two types of January signings that work well. The first is kind of a young player with potential but not too much hype, so they don't have to start all the time, who can use the second half of the season to kind of settle in with the club before a good pre-season and then getting the season started. And the other is a seriously good player who can settle immediately, but they are very rare and very expensive. So I just think United should be focusing on having a list of summer targets with backups and be ready to back Solskjaer with a serious amount of money. Don't waste it in January. Just spend the 100, 200, 300 million that's needed in June and July and forget about January, because unless United are embroiled in some kind of relegation battle, as they kind of currently are, they don't need to worry about January. We can just get the season over with. Somehow, I mean, we've written off the season by October, which is incredible.
Well, yeah, and as sad as this is to kind of admit, to be fair, by January, our season probably will be over in terms of actually doing something in the league, or, you know, all right, maybe we'll still be in the FA Cup or the Europa League or something, but we're not really going to have anything to play for in the league for the majority of the season, you would think, come January. So what's the point in paying probably double the price for a player, because you always pay massively inflated prices in January? What's the point in paying overinflated prices for a player when actually, they're not really going to help us that much. The whole point of January signings is that it's someone that's going to give you a boost and sort of get you through to the end of the season. And for us, although that would be great to have a new signing, we don't really have anything to give us a boost towards. So much rather just wait, pay a more normal price in the summer and get everything done then when all the new signings can come in and have a proper pre-season with the club.
Yeah, I think the other thing I'd be interested to talk about from a transfer window kind of view is a lot of the talk this week as well has been about how, and in the summer as well to be fair, about how United have got this new focus on young British players. And I completely understand it. And Wan-Bissaka is a very good signing. Dan James is a good signing. United have benefited from these kind of transfers before in a big way throughout all of their managers, Fergie, Busby and all between Atkinson, Sexton and Doherty. But I just have some concerns. It seems like United are kind of... So when Ed Woodward first started as chief executive at United, there was this interview where he said United should have a Ballon d'Or contender at any point in their team, and United should be signing Galactico signings like Real Madrid. And then that's obviously changed now, and it even changed in the last 3 years, and then now it's gone on to this British emphasis, young British emphasis. Now I get it, but I also have fears that United will dig their own holes, dig their own graves by focusing, if they are, solely on these kind of players, because British players are notoriously expensive, and even more expensive for United because everyone hates United and everyone knows how much money they have. They also demand higher wages a lot of the time, a lot more pressure, and most of the time not as good. So it just seems a bit of a weird one for me.
Well, again, it just seems like another way of United kind of briefing the press on a new sort of strategy that is almost as much a marketing strategy as it is an actual recruitment strategy of, oh, we're going to remake this team in that proper British way and play proper good British football with British players in the team. It's like, well, actually, fans don't really care about that in the long run. I don't care if we have a team of 11 English players or 11 non-English players. As long as we're winning the league, that's all I really care about, you know? You don't like players because of where they're from. You like players because of who they are and the way they play on the pitch, really. So I honestly, I'm not sure that this whole young English thing will stick around for too long, because I think they'll slowly realise that it's just not sustainable to be going after young English players, because like you said, they're expensive.
They're so expensive.
They're expensive. They have way too much pressure on them, which we've already seen destroy some players' careers. They have way too much pressure on them. They're too expensive. And often, although the experience of playing in the Premier League is helpful in terms of making the transition to another Premier League club, I actually don't think the kind of training that they get, especially at a younger age, is that great. And so you end up with players who technically are not actually that good.
Chris Smalling.
Yeah. Could make that argument about Aaron Wan-Bissaka as well, to be fair.
Yeah, someone who is turned into a right back at a very late age, and he's doing really well, but technically hasn't got some of the things that right backs would be required to have in a lot of other countries.
I mean, even to a lesser extent, look at Jesse Lingard and Marcus Rashford, two extremely talented players playing in forward roles, who I think, with the kind of talent that they have, if they were brought up in any other country, would probably now be a lot further ahead in their careers than they really are. But their techniques are a little bit scruffy and just very inconsistent.
Yeah. I mean, I think United will probably change their tactics when Leicester demand $100 million for James Maddison or something like that. And United I think we should probably start looking abroad now. Right, we should move on to previewing the Liverpool game. United do have injuries. Anthony Martial hoping to be back, though. So is Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who we've just been talking about. But David De Gea possibly out with a groin injury. Picked it up for Spain against Sweden. He got his first team spot back for Spain and played well until this injury. And I think the key factor against Liverpool in any game is David De Gea often. So that's a big concern.
It is a big concern, but I am a lot more confident about our backup goalkeeper than I think most teams in the league are. I mean, Romero is no David De Gea, but obviously, I'd much prefer to have De Gea in there against Liverpool, don't get me wrong, but Romero is a very, very competent backup. I'm not saying he's going to be able to single-handedly save us a game like De Gea will, but I don't think he's going to lose us the game either.
Yeah, I guess, that's the difference, is De Gea could rescue a point for United after a 90-minute barrage from Liverpool. And Romero, you just can't see doing that. He will let in the goals that you expect him to let in, whereas De Gea will save the goals that you just have every confidence are going to hit the back of the net when they're struck from the player's foot. So we could just hope that De Gea will be fit. We'll see. There's been no word from United. Spain's doctor has said he had an issue and he played on because he wanted to. Let's talk about a few other things. Axel Tuanzebe or Victor Lindelof against Liverpool?
For me, I'd probably go Lindelof just because I don't think he's done anything wrong to warrant Tuanzebe playing in front of him, but I would be very happy with Tuanzebe playing as well. I think he's done very, very well when he's come into the side. I just don't think you can warrant dropping Lindelof at the moment because I don't think Tuanzebe has played really any better than Lindelof necessarily, and Lindelof has been absolutely fine so far this season. So I think there's no point disrupting that Maguire-Lindelof partnership if you don't have to, especially in a big game.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. The only concern I'd have is if Paul Pogba isn't fit, which I don't think he will be. It looks like he's going to be out for the whole of October. Then I think Tuanzebe gives you more from the base of defence in terms of speeding up the play. I think Lindelof is a good passer of the ball, but in terms of setting the tempo from defence, I think Tuanzebe kind of makes the game go by quicker and sets that for United, which Pogba normally has to do when Lindelof is playing, as we've seen before. Now, the front three, Rashford, and let's just talk about Rashford for a second, because he scored for England against Bulgaria. Quite a few players scored for England against Bulgaria, to be fair. But he does show his quality for England, and he still starts for them ahead of Jadon Sancho. And it kind of sums United's problems up, is that he drowns in the pressure and expectation at United. And when he's put in a confident England side where his role is much clearer, and there are other players to take on responsibility like Kane and Sterling, and many others, to be fair, then he looks confident and plays much better. I just think it's worth remembering quite how good Rashford is. He's 21. He's a really good player. I don't need to pull out how many goals he scored, how many trophies he's won, because I've done that before on this podcast, but he just is a really good player going through a bad spell. And United shouldn't be relying on him, and that's the problem.
Yeah, it is a problem, because he's still a young player, and we shouldn't have to be relying on a 21-year-old to kind of be our saviour. But he's going through a patch of not great form, at least with United. But as we've said before, he's a massive confidence player. And so hopefully his goal, his very good goal for England last week, can kind of help give him a boost as he comes back to United. And I'm quite critical of Marcus Rashford. I feel like probably more critical than most, just because he frustrates me in how much talent he has and that he doesn't necessarily always show that. But it is easy to forget. He is a very good player, especially when he's on top form. And these sort of games against Liverpool do tend to bring out the best against him. You know, he scored before against Man City on his first ever Manchester derby. He absolutely skinned Trent Alexander-Arnold a while ago at home against Liverpool. So, you know, hopefully his goal against England and this being a big game can really fire him up. And we always say about these big games, they are both a potential nightmare, but also they are a big opportunity. Because if you get a good result in these kind of games, it does have the potential to kind of turn around your season.
Yeah, and as you say, Rashford has performed in many big games before. Who would you start alongside him? Because Dan James looks like he'll be fit. He did have a head collision for Wales, but I think he's fine. Anthony Martial potentially back. Martial will be it's a difficult one. I was going to say Martial would be a game changer for United. Now, he could be a game changer for United, but he can be very inconsistent.
I think if Martial is fully fit, you've got to start him, just because I don't see anyone else who would come in and do a better job than Martial. It is always a little bit of a risk because he is very inconsistent, but I'd much rather play Martial knowing that he might not perform to his best than play someone like Pereira or Mata, who that their ceiling is very limited.
Yeah, I think if Martial's name is on the team lineup and Pereira or Mata is not, then I will feel much more confident in that hour before the game kicks off on Sunday.
And, you know, in some ways, stuff like this, you've kind of got to think of it from Liverpool's perspective.
Yeah.
If you're a Liverpool defender sitting in that change room, whose name would you be? I mean, I don't think any of them will really scare you, but who would you be least happy to see on that team sheet? It's not Pereira, it's not Mata, it's probably Anthony Martial.
Well, out of any of the United players, if Liverpool are looking at United squad, there's probably two players, three who scare them, Rashford, Pogba and Martial, and potentially Dan James because of his pace, but I think Liverpool have a good enough defence and good enough fullbacks to deal with that. Yeah, I think if I had to choose my front three, I'd probably go with Rashford on the left, Martial up front, and Dan James on the right.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Just because I think Rashford, a spell out on the left could be good for Marcus Rashford, because I think that's where he's actually at his best. And we've had this conversation so many times over the last 3-4 years, where is Marcus Rashford a centre forward? Not really, is he?
No, he's not. I think he's only a centre forward if he's playing with someone else up front.
Yeah, and on the left he shows some serious
quality. And obviously
quality.
Very few teams want to play two up front anymore.
United would have to change their entire system to accommodate that. Although, as we've said, we discussed the three at the back and a front two of Rashford and Martial with Greenwood coming in from time to time.
Yeah, which I really do hope that we try
it
would at some point.
It would be exciting. Whether it would work, and it's not just some kind of Football Manager FIFA ideal, as so many things that fans say are, we'd see, but I think it would be exciting. What are you going as your prediction for the Liverpool game? I'm scared to ask this.
I'll be very interested to see how Liverpool set up, because traditionally in the last few years, despite how well they've been doing and how poorly we've been doing, they come to Old Trafford and they don't really play that expansively. They look to kind of sit in, control the game, yes, but not go out all guns blazing on us. And I wonder if the huge contrast in our form at the moment will encourage Klopp to be a little bit more risky. But I actually don't think it will. I think Liverpool would be content getting out of Old Trafford with a draw.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to go, I think, with a 1-1 draw.
Oof.
I think Liverpool are by far a better team than us, and if they come out and play the way that they usually do, they will absolutely trounce us, probably 3 or 4 nil.
Yeah.
But I just think that they won't come out all guns blazing. They'll kind of sit back, maybe control possession and control the game, but not really try and play in a risky manner. And I think they'll probably nick a goal, but I think that will give us a little bit of a chance as well.
Yeah, I mean, they often seem... I mean, the Liverpool of last year that came to United could have been Premier League champions and almost were, and yet they've kind of seemed stifled by the occasion at Old Trafford. It should be a really good atmosphere. The Red Army section have 1,400 seats for this game in the Stretford End lower tier. Many more people than that applied, and it should be an incredible atmosphere. United Liverpool games normally are.
And to be fair to United, the new J Stand initiative really is making a big difference.
Yeah. I went in the Red Army section for the Arsenal game, and everyone who's a regular in that section said it was probably the worst they've heard it. And it was pretty good. But yeah, I think this Liverpool game will be huge.
I mean, you can hear it. You can hear it even in sort of nothing games, like even the Europa League game against the Star.
Yeah.
The crowd was up for it the entire game, even though it was a Thursday night game against a nothing team, and it was a very bad game. So the entire game, you could still hear
that's
them
a big
singing.
Change. I was there at the Rochdale game, not standing in the Red Army section, and yet it was a brilliant atmosphere. It was one of the best atmospheres I've heard at Old Trafford over the last two seasons. And yet it was Rochdale and we drew 1-1 in a terrible game. Right, you've gone 1-1. I'm going to go... I'm tempted by 1-1 as well. No, I'm going to go 2-1 Liverpool. I think this is the first time I've ever predicted United to lose on the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. And this is our, I don't know, 160th, 170th, no idea, somewhere around there episode.
Well, like Paul Merson predicting Arsenal to do the Invincibles every season.
Yeah, and Mark Lawrenson does the same with Liverpool. I predict draws a lot of the time. It's just, I always feel bad predicting United. I don't want to send people off, whether they're on their commute or anything, with the idea that United are going to get beaten. So I kind of just lie through my teeth to try and...
Maybe we should just say to listeners from now on, whatever we say, just take a goal off from United, and that's like our real prediction.
Yeah. What, so mine's going to turn into a 2-0 Liverpool comfortable win? No, No, I genuinely think Liverpool will win 2-1, but I'm sure that will change when I find out how injured David De Gea is or how injured Anthony Martial is, etc. Right, we've run over a bit already, so not going to do too much on the youth teams. All you need to know is Angel Gomez scored twice for England's under-20s. Brandon Williams played in both of those games. Mason Greenwood was forced to pull out of England's under-21 side with a back injury, but he should be okay soon. Younger levels, Jimmy Garner scored from the spot as he captained England in one of their games and played in both of their games. Tedden Mengi played for England's under-18s. Will Fish for England's under-17s. Harvey Neville, son of Phil, was called up for the Ireland under 19 side. Hannibal Medjbri involved for France under 17s. Ethan Galbraith and Kieran O'Hara in the youth sides for Northern Ireland and Ireland respectively. And Dean Henderson, lone star at Sheffield United, received his first senior call up for England but didn't play. In women's news, which is much more important, there was good news. United secured their second victory of the season after a tough start to the campaign. They faced Spurs, a team who finished behind United in the WSL Championship last year and was promoted alongside them. An own goal was sandwiched between strikes from Hansen and Ross, while Lauren James was sent off in the last minute as Casey Stoney's side triumphed 3-0 at the Hive in North London. The Reds now come back home to host Manchester City in the second ever derby between the sides. That's on Sunday. Before United men's face Liverpool, you can go and watch at Lee Sports Village. It's a FA WSL Cup match. Right, we're going to have to leave it there on Series 5, Episode 11 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you for listening, as always. If you're enjoying the show, and it seems quite a few of you are, because we just hit our 500,000th listen, is that the right phrase? I think it is. More than 500,000 listeners now, so thank you for everyone who has tuned in since, what is it, January 2016 somehow. Our fifth series.
Yeah. And still not incredible. One has been positive.
Yeah, we have chosen the worst time, or maybe the best time, because it gives us a lot to talk about to have a Manchester United podcast. For more from Jack throughout the week and his reactions, immediate reactions to the Liverpool game, you can find him on Twitter at
UTDTait, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod, that P-O-D at the end there. Have a great week. Try and enjoy the Liverpool game, no matter the score. And I'm Reds. Goodbye.
Network. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.